this bolt of lightning shot across the universe and inspired me with the idea that we have to do a podcast. And that's what I wanted to tell you. We should do a podcast. Okay, bye.
I hit record.
All right, I hit record. Colin, welcome to our podcast. I'm Ned. This is Meg. This is our podcast. It's called Feature Creep, colon.
Built-in microwave, semicolon.
Whatever the fucking title of the podcast. You know the name of this podcast before we do. Well, I guess.
That's right.
Before we do, as of this, well, if you're listening, you know what I mean.
the time warp of the internet.
Those of us who are being recorded right now know. I mean, we'll know, obviously, at the end of it, because we'll make the, anyway, whatever.
Right.
The inception, yeah. So we were just bitching about poor design choices and fads. Like, the fucking... buying reading glasses, and now it's almost impossible to buy reading glasses that don't have the blue light filter, which is fine if you're using them to look at screens and you want to have that experience of not having the color blue so intensely. Fine.
However,
some of us read printed material, use reading glasses for other things that aren't blue light shining in our fucking eyeballs, and I would rather just have an uninterfering lens. Now, I've found some, but it's hard to find the ones that I want. Like, for sure, there's a big trend in the sort of the blue light filtering. And what I really want are those like anti-reflective coatings that make the glasses like less reflective and give you less of that. I can't remember what it's called, but like basically like refraction.
Yeah.
That can blind you, or I mean, not blind you, but like just mess with your vision while you're trying to read something.
Yep.
Anyway. We're also bitched about those fucking blue LED, the blue LED trend where everything had to fucking have an eye piercing blue LED on it.
Why?
Because they invented blue LEDs and now that was the
and
thing
it's,
to sell. So
it's such a weird wavelength too. Like some people biologically like can't view the wavelengths of a blue LED head on. You have to look at it like slightly like with your peripheral vision, which is like ironic considering how fucking impossible they are to ignore.
Right.
Like you may not be able to see them, but they'll keep you awake. Oh God. And it's annoying to me that like the whole thing that necessitated all of your glasses coming with blue light blocking coating on them is that we heroically and unnecessarily have included blue LED lights on every fucking object now.
Yep.
And because we've put the Internet of Things into objects that just used to exist in the world, literally everything has a blue LED light on it now to let you know that someone somewhere is monitoring you and selling that data.
My favorite version of this is the CPAP machines that came out that were like, that people were complaining, like basically a CPAP machine, if you don't know what it is a constant pressure error device that allows you to, it breaks the snore cycle. Anyway, I don't need to get into it, but people use them for sleeping. If they have sleep apnea, it helps solve for sleep apnea. And they are there. They're a device to help you sleep. And of course, the very early versions of them were fucking loud.
Oh my God. And enormous.
Enormous. And
like fucking, my dad had one of the ones that went over his entire face and he had to shave his beard.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that still exists in terms of what you have to wear, but like the machine itself also like,
oh yes. Very noisy.
Yeah, like anyway, but some of the earlier versions, like when the blue LED fad came along, they were not devoid of it. And like, there were sleep studies showing that like people's sleep was harmed by the device that's anyway.
Right. I can't. Yeah. I would love to be able to deal with my sleep apnea, but every time I put this fucking mask on, it keeps me awake.
Yes. All right. Anyway, enough of that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about serious now. We're going to get down to doing a podcast. So if you are a first time listener, welcome. If you've listened before, you know what you're in for, maybe, depending on which episode you listen to. You might have listened to an episode where you're like, man, these guys really have their shit together and they fucking do this research. And maybe that was a great episode. And then this one turns out not to be that. Don't hesitate to just skip on by and find another one. But
blow right through.
But a few things in the front matter. We'd love to hear from you if you want to participate in this conversation or future conversations. you can email us. And the person to contact is Dana. She is the founder and CEO of this podcast. And Dana, that's D-A-N-A at fcbm.io. You just chuck an email down the pipeline into the intertubes, the series of tubes, and eventually it will show up on our doorstep in its little digital format, and then we'll read it, and then we'll respond and be like, fuck you, we don't let anybody in our cool kids club.
What I would love is if we had some magic process for our cool kids club, where like if people emailed us, it got translated into a hard copy brought to us by hand in duplicate by messengers who knocked on our front doors at exactly the same time, synchronized delivery.
Yes.
And so that you and I would receive the message in duplicate at the identical time and read it at the same speed, so that we would know everything in tandem.
And I would be like fully primed in the right mood for it, because I'd be like, fuck, somebody's at the door, unexpected, I have to put pants on, what the fuck, like open the door, like look out at them all crazy eyed, and then have to read some fucking nonsense from an internet stranger.
Right.
I'm really selling it. Like, you definitely should be writing in. No, seriously, we'd like to hear from, we've had very good emails that we really like, and we've had we've never really gotten a lot of hate mail. I guess we haven't made it yet, although we are number 49 or 40 something in the category of design. Speaking of what the fuck is this podcast about? It is ostensibly about art and design, and we topped the charts in Ireland for some fucking week, according to some spam marketing email that said we were like 49th or something in the category of art and design in the country of Ireland.
Some stranger
take that, you
who,
Irish. You guys are,
some stranger reached out to us and was like, I can help you market your podcast. And we're like, how did you get our information? Also, like, did you not know that we're anti monetized?
Right. Yes. Yeah. You, if you're listening to ads while you hear that, while you're listening to us, you've taken a wrong turn, and I would steer you gently towards our website, where you can get our RSS feed directly without any advertising or really any tracking whatsoever. Partly because we don't care enough to put tracking on it, and partly because we actually don't want to track you. We don't care. I mean, we care. Right. We care about you. We don't need to know.
Therefore,
we're not marketing to you. We don't need to know anything about you that you don't want to tell us, which leads us to writing the email. If you send us an email, we'll also do our best to honor your wishes in that email in terms of like privacy. Like, we're not going to be like, oh, well, Sarah Smith from Minnesota said we suck, and also like shared this personal private story that we're going to smear all. Like, none of that. We're not going to share your name or anything. We're just going to, you know, we're not going to collect your email address either. I mean, it will be, you know, you're going to send it to a Google email and someone's going to collect it on the way. But that's not us. Anyway, long story short, send us an email. We'll respond to you. And then if we use any, like if we talk about what you said, we'll let you know first that we'd like to, and make sure that it's all on the
credit email. You and everything,
credit you, et cetera. Or not if you don't want that.
Or not if you don't want.
Yeah.
Anyway. But we will not take credit for your bad ideas. Let us just say that. Yes.
Although if we may encourage your bad ideas.
We might encourage them, yes.
I mean, there's, I don't know. If you've listened before, you know where we're at, I think, hopefully.
So,
Anyway, 8 minutes in, we're going to find the topic right now.
That's right.
Yes.
I wanted to say that I was watching, before we started doing this, I was watching Trixie and Katya, who are a couple of drag queens, and they have an online empire of podcasts. And like, they've done a bunch of different podcasts and like web series. They did a web series called and then they also did with like hundreds of videos.
Yeah.
And then they also do The Bald and the Beautiful, which is their podcast that's like ongoing right now. Mm-hmm. And they videotape it so that they post all of the podcast episodes in video format to YouTube. And then they also have been employed by Netflix to do a show called like Trixie and Katya Like to Watch. Or I think is what it's called, but it's like basically like two drag queens who love to watch, and they watch Netflix shows, and then they talk through it the whole time. So they're basically like, it's kind of like Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Okay. Yeah. But two drag
with
queens.
Two drag queens.
Yeah.
And they're so funny, and they just move from topic to topic seamlessly. Yeah. Like, I didn't realize, like, I think you and I kind of like think at the same speed that Trixie and Katya think at, where we're just like constantly responding in a cycle back and forth. Like it's a feedback loop that just gets faster and faster.
Yeah.
And I totally can keep up with them. But when Greg was here doing massage therapy for me the other day, I was like, Greg, during my massage, we're going to listen to Trixie and Katya. You're going to love them. And I don't think he could keep up with what they were saying, because they do use a lot of slang and stuff, and they are younger than Greg.
Yeah.
Anyway, Greg's older than I am, but,
I love that. Like, I love that experience. I get that experience the most. Like, I used to go see Shakespeare plays a lot, and I think that's a great place to have that experience, because you're like, they are speaking a language that is real close to your language, but they're using slang or vernacular that's like not what you're used to, and it takes you a while to shift into it, you know?
Yeah.
And I love that kind of like when you can, because you watch.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you watch Trixie and Katya a lot. And, I've watched a few of them, and because I think you and I, like, we are not so far adjacent in terms of like our communication style as them.
Yep.
It's not a big shift, but I absolutely can. I've met your massage therapist, Greg. He's great.
Right.
This is not a
dig. You know him.
He's fantastic. But I think I love being in that position if you're supported in it, and nobody's like shoving you in the face being like, oh, you're an idiot because you don't know this.
Right.
Instead, people are like, oh, let me share this cool thing. And you're like, okay, let me like shift my brain gears down a little and go into location and get over here and figure out what the fuck's going on.
I can't remember what they were talking about either, but you know, they're like very like, they talk a lot about, Trixie and Katya talk about sex all the time.
Yep.
And they have like sex with men. And so there's like a bunch of like, when Greg was over, they were talking about a bunch of stuff about having like gay sex, which is completely foreign to Greg.
Yes.
To say nothing so of like the like, slang that goes along with
it. Right.
So he was like, what did they just say?
Yeah.
Like a number of times. And I was like, oh, it's just they just have kind of like their own flow going. But I was watching them before we started doing this, which is why I was like, now I want to record a podcast, because their podcasts are all just about like some kernel of something that sends them off on a tirade.
Yes. Yeah.
And, which is basically what we do too. Like, here's this tiny thing. Also, here's the thing unrelated to that tiny thing I was also thinking about, but at like a million miles an hour. And they have a fabulous series of podcasts, so you should check them out too. That's my recommendation for the day.
Yeah, I dig it. Well, I will, and also maybe if you're listening, you might also too.
And the beautiful.
I'm gonna just
What do you want to talk about?
Go through some of our topics here.
Ooh. I'll tell you something very briefly.
Yeah.
Well, I just have an update for anyone in the listening world about things that are going on around my house. There was a hawk that landed in my yard, killed a rabbit, and then cleaned itself off in my bird bath. And that was amazing. And I think that they are red-tailed hawks, or they might be red-shouldered hawks. I don't know. These are two distinct things. I know there's like 11 different species of hawks that live in Minnesota, or raptors, I should say.
Yeah.
Maybe there's more raptors than 11, but there's 11 hawks for sure. And some of them look a little bit alike, and it's hard to distinguish them. So I've been like looking at pictures that we took of this hawk and looking online to try and figure out which one it is. And I think it's a red hawk, either red-shouldered or red-tailed. But anyway, they're really cool, and that happened, and I think that they were mating, and they haven't made any noise for the last few days, so I wonder if they, like, hunkered down to have some romantic time and, like, have more baby hawks. I don't know.
Yeah.
I also found the year's first, this year's first garden spider. We have orb weaver spiders here that get very large, and I found one in my garden, but then the place where she had made the web, which was otherwise fantastic, is also like a very high traffic throughway for bees in my yard, and so I think she was like, oh, this is not a great place to put a giant orb web, because I'm just gonna catch a bunch of angry bees. So she moved along. And last August and September, there was an orb weaver that took up residence inside my front porch.
Oh yeah.
Which is a generally pretty good place for at least one spider to be, maybe not more than one, because I don't know that they'd get enough food if they were struggling against each other for resources. But one orb weaver in the front porch can definitely survive. And there is a spider egg sac that orb weaver left behind last year. And I have been watching it and making sure that it survives. And I haven't touched anything so that I didn't disturb it. And I'm like, since the arrival of the big orb weaver in the garden out back, I thought, oh, any day now that spider egg sac is going to hatch up there and I'm going to have like hundreds of baby orb weavers in my front porch. I'm going to have to rescue them all.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and help them out.
Yeah, I guess if you catch the egg sac, I bet there's stuff you can do.
Yeah, I didn't want to disturb it because it's kind of like suspended in its own little like webby thing up in the corner and of a transom window.
I'm just wondering if since, you know, kind of the same approach you've taken with bees and things where you might be able to relocate them into a more fortuitous location.
Right.
If with a little reading, obviously, if that makes sense. Yeah. So that's.
And we saved two baby squirrels the other day with seconds to spare.
Are they okay? Or?
I have not called the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center back yet.
Yeah, that's fair. It could be great news or it could be really bad news.
Yeah, they could be like, yeah, they didn't make it through the night. And I'd be like, I'm not surprised because that's kind of what I thought was going to happen anyway. But we, at 5:40 p.m., we went for our daily walk. And we walked down the block, and about three or four blocks down, there were two baby squirrels that had fallen out of the nest, and they did not look great, and there were flies on them, and we thought they were dead, and they were not dead. In fact, they were possibly, like, survivably not dead. And so I ran back home on foot, grabbed a box and some towels, got in the car, drove the car down, put the squirrels in the box. Damon carried the box. We got in the car and we drove to the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center, which is like 15 minutes away. And we got there in like 14 and a half minutes and they closed at 6 o'clock. So like five to seven minutes was eaten up on me running back to the house, getting the stuff and driving back to the squirrels. And then we like flew to the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center. And I was like, if we don't get there by the time they lock the front door, we're going to have to watch two squirrels die in our house overnight.
So rough.
And they may have died anyway. Like sometimes it's like wildlife is really touchy. Like sometimes they can't be saved and then this rehabilitation center will euthanize them so that they don't struggle and suffer all the way to dead. And I can accept that as a possible outcome as well. But at least if they were in such bad shape that they were going to die, they would have like done it more quickly. And if they weren't and they were save capable, then they will they'll help them. Like one of them had a little laceration on his side and I was like, oh buddy. And another one had a little bloody lip and I was like, this is so sad, these poor little squirrels. And so I don't know, this is like, I noticed that I walk, when I go out for these walks and stuff, I look at the ground a lot. And I thought, is this like some weird postural habit that I've picked up that's not great because I'm always looking down? And then I realized with these, it dawned on me when we found these squirrels. No, I'm literally looking at the ground all the fucking time because every third time we go on a walk, we find an animal in distress that I have to rescue.
That's fair. Yeah.
Like it is a habit, but it's a habit built over time from like observing the world around me and not wanting to step on a critter or miss one that needs help or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. I wonder, this reminds me of when I was a kid, I remember there was the Sesame Street book I had, and I think it's called Grover and the Everything in the Whole Wide World Museum.
Oh, cool. Yes. Oh, I know this book.
And it's like, it's basically all about like Grover learning to not just look at the ground or look at the sky, but to look all around.
Yes.
And like it's, I remember, I'm trying to find some like screenshots of it. Like I found it online, but it's, it doesn't have like, I'm trying to see if there's like some internal pages I can see. So I'll know for sure. Yeah, this is definitely the one. It's like, it's like he goes in one room and everything's on the ground. So he's like looking on the ground, but then he misses the thing that like hits him in the head or what. Like, it's just sort of like, you made me think of that because you're like, I'm always looking at the ground. And anytime anybody says that, I just think of that book. It was so, for some reason, it just really tickled me as a kid. I think partly it was just so stimulating because like each room like had so much
that
he saw, right? And he was like so enamored with it. And I was like, I relate to this.
Yep. Did you ever read the Where's Waldo books?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, read. They're not really readers.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'd spent hours like
God, they're going so great. Through
looking at all the crazy shit. And I loved how there was like, I don't remember what they call it, but like, I don't remember exactly how they referred to it, but there was like a page at the end that was like the bonus things to find on a page, or like other things besides Waldo to look for.
Yes. There are 17 walking canes in this book.
Well, you keep derailing me. We were going to do, so will you explain our process for how we come up with a topic so that we can get on with coming up with a topic?
Yes. So we text each other constantly throughout the day and just sort of like tell the other one what we're responding to in our immediate environment is usually, it's like just like a long running, like, I just had this happen. I just had this happen and it made me think this. And so
remember when people were like, why, like, annoyed, like making joke posts on Facebook, I pooped today or whatever, like that's this is our own personal Facebook, right? It's like,
I pooped. While I was pooping, I had this thought. So I was watching YouTube, and so we will text each other when we have an idea that we can spin off of. We'll text it to each other like it's the title of a podcast episode, and we'll do like FCBM underscore,
so we can search for it. It's like a hashtag.
Fucking blue LED lights on everything necessitating blue locking glasses for everybody. And so when we think about what to do for a podcast episode, we will just use the search function in our chat and go back to anything that we've tagged with FCBM, and then we have a whole list of topics that like got us riled up in the first place that we could talk about.
Speaking of random shit, I just got a like a spam call from Belgium.
Lucky you.
And it suddenly occurred to me that like what we should do, I get a lot of spam calls. I should just plug my phone into the podcast recording equipment.
Oh my God. And when it rings,
I can just
answer
like,
it.
Answer it and be like, hey, you're on air with FCBM live with your hosts, Ned and Meg. Go ahead.
Oh my God, I love it. Ooh, if we do this, we should have a list of like fake questions. You know what I mean, like, what's your opinion about something weird?
All philosophy questions, like really like esoteric shit, like, you know, Kant's opinion on like strawberries or something. I don't know, but
you're not missing anything.
That's the impression I get. I recently oh my god, god damn it, you derailed me. Okay, so we have these podcast topics, so I'm going to read through some of the more recent ones, and maybe we'll pick one. It'll also help our listeners understand or get a flavor of it. So the very last one we sent was, welcome to our PCast, where we talk about teaport. And this is in reference to give background, how this title came up about was that we were talking about the line or the the NEOM.
The Saudi Arabian government exercise in futility and myth making.
Not government, dictatorship. I feel like that's dictatorship. Not a government. It's just a bunch of people with money who do whatever they want. They're not an elected government, as far as I can tell. I mean, if they are,
They're like a kingdom.
They're a kingdom.
Kingdom of Saudi Arabia is using sovereign wealth money, fund money, and it seems to me like what they're doing is they're spending huge amounts of sovereign wealth money, which is like the money generated from the sale of oil and other resources that is supposed to benefit the entire population, kind of like a giant welfare fund. And they've spent all of it, which is mind-boggling because there was so much money in there to begin with. They've spent all of it on creating this city in the middle of the desert that is supposed to be like a 1600 tall meter tall building that is also like how wide was it, like, I can't even remember. It's logistically kind of like impossible when we really get down to what they're describing
We actually did an early episode about it, and I think we're ramping up to do another one, which is why. But the teaport came from Meg's comment about, I was like, I'd made some flippant comment about like, oh, next thing you know, they're just going to be saying they're going to have transport, like teleporters to
get everybody from one end to the other.
And then you were like, well, they'll be called teaport, because we shorten everything because in the future.
It's the future.
Like, then I made the PCast reference.
Yes, to our podcast.
So there was another follow-up, or there was a title before this, which was, which I think we need to workshop because I think it'll be a good title for our, when we do the Neon podcast again.
Yes.
I suggested the title of, if we build things in a straight line, then that minimizes distance between locations on that line, right?
Right, right.
And I think the workshopping of this is to do a little research on geometry and use the proper terms in terms of like topology and minimum and maximum of distances. Because a big thing about the line and the Neon thing is like they talked about how they were like going into the third dimension to solve the problem of cities by making a line.
Right. A
anyway,
line.
We talked about this before in the previous podcast, but
this seems to want to build off the concept that the shortest distance between two points is a line. But when you're talking about a city, you're talking about three or four dimensions, two.
Yeah. So anyway, we can work on that a little bit. I actually had, you know, before that, I had, guys, I'm starting to think global warming might be real as a title. Yes. We've got, I think actually one that I would love to, maybe we could do this podcast about it, is work on the, we could talk about the book idea, which is For Want of a Nail. So we have two book ideas, but we have one that's like really coming into fruition. We finished the book, Every Time a Bell Rings. Mm-hmm. Which you can't find on our website, but we should probably put a link there so you can find it. But it is for sale on Amazon, and you can buy it in any bookstore that can order books. It has a true ISBN number, so you can, you know, reference the ISBN number and order it. Anyway, send us an email if you're interested in that book. I wasn't really set up to do advertising for that today. We need to get that nailed down. We need to be like, here's how you find this book in case you're interested. But
yes, because we don't, it's very hard to get.
No. Yeah. The problem is a lot of people decided that Every Time a Bell Rings is a good name for a book. And
yep,
we didn't
makes
really,
it harder to find.
Yeah. We didn't really think about that until after we'd really kind of finished the book. I mean, we knew that before we went completely with publishing, but by then it was really obvious like that had to be the name of it, and it's because of the nature of the book. But so this new book idea, For Want of a Nail, which in which we catalog a bunch of modern and dumb versions of that, like how, you know, that phrase of For Want of a Nail, the kingdom was lost, and that idea of being like, you know, if only we had not, you know, the ways that we've painted ourselves into a corner, like both like on the macro or maybe on an individualist.
Yes.
Level, like societal levels, whatever. You know, that ties in with global warming for sure.
It sure does. It's also like not totally unrelated to your complaint about the blue blocking glasses.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah, we're anyway. So that's
we got some books in the pipeline. Yes. We haven't mentioned anything about the bird book.
No.
Bird book.
We could
let's talk burbs. So you started this somehow. This was like a spark of an idea you had because you texted me the name of a bird. Oh, it was you texted me and you said bird or not.
Yes, wherein... I had a podcast episode idea was bird or not, where it was like, because there's some funny bird names like the blue-footed booby.
Right.
Where if you'd never
real
heard
bird.
Of that, you might be like, that's not a real bird name. No, right. That can't be right.
Balderdash.
So,
we thought, immediately you were like, what we should do is like play this game of like bird or not. And then you started sending me a bunch of not bird names, like made up bird names. And most of them are indistinguishable from actual bird names. And then that gave me the idea that we should just make another book. And like our first book, we should put the bird name and the textual details, like stats about the bird or whatever. And on the facing page, an illustration of said bird.
Yes.
And it's a whole book of birds, but it's spelled B-I-R-B-S, not D-S. Right. So... the same letter twice, B-I-R-B.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is adorable. And the burbs are, we have like 84 burb names now.
So burb is an internet slang. I did not come up with it. Yeah. Just to be clear, if anyone was like, hey, now don't go thinking you thought of that yourself. But it is a great name for this because none of the birds are real. At least we should probably do a little Googling and make sure we didn't actually think we came up with a funny bird name and it's actually a bird name.
Yeah, if you Google like burb meme, there like a ton of burb memes comes up. There's so many burbs. Very adorable, these burbs. So yeah, we're gonna make a burb book. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, so and should we read some of the bird names? They're great.
Yes.
I don't think it'll ruin anything. I mean, I think it's,
yes.
Yeah. Well, the one that really started it off was the brown-crested tit boober, which is what I come up with.
I love that so much, the brown-crested tit boober.
And there's like it's hard to convey like how funny it was because we were texting these to each other, and then just like it was getting worse and worse. And as we kind of go through this list, you'll start to see. Are you looking at the list as well? Yeah.
Yes, I am. I think one of my absolute favorites is the white flanked cuzzler.
The white flanked cuzzler is really good. Yes.
It sounds so Seussian.
Yes.
I love it so much.
Yeah.
Small footed Bantaloon
is good. There's one that's really
the chickle gibber.
There's let's see, the black tipped bip wabber.
If I've had enough time to in between like reading or looking at these, I forget them.
Yes, yes.
Because they're so nonsensical. There's nothing to like pin the words to.
Yep.
And we go back and look at them. I am like, I laugh at them all over again. Like I haven't seen them before.
Like any of the ones with Nick or Booby in it are just hilarious.
Standard Babble Fowler.
Standard Babble Fowler. I'm looking... a crescent chattel whacker.
Pebble belly diggler.
Brown horned tit fickler. No, sorry. Brown horned tit flicker.
Nice. A jumping kip finch. I defy you to say that's not a real bird name.
Right?
You know?
The barn foggler.
Sticky wicker wab.
The titty whacked wing dingler.
Oh god, they're so good. We just keep like I was even surprised by us because I know that we can go off on things like this for at length.
Yes. Yeah.
But like we really kept this up for it was like 2 or 3 days in a row we just kept adding to the list. It was like it grew so long, so quickly.
Uh-huh.
I was impressed with the volume of the output that we were capable of.
I feel like there's some that aren't on here that I thought there was like a boob whacker or booby whacker or tit boober.
Tit boober.
Oh, the tit boober. Yeah.
Tit boober.
Okay. Yeah.
The red-billed bling banger was yours too. That was a good one.
Yeah.
Oh god, the flightless conker. Claw-footed ribbler.
The lilting half rubbler.
The miniature shim bibber.
The short-sighted dick warbler.
So great. I just cannot wait to illustrate all of these.
The sticky wicker web.
Oh, well, I hope everybody else enjoys these.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll have to write up some some descriptions Yeah, we'll need to do a little research on there. And come up with something. But yeah,
wonderful.
Very excited.
What other creative pursuits do we have going right now?
I don't know. But actually, if you're listening to this and you think of some bird names and you would like to include a bird in the book, you can.
Yes,
email
we
us.
Will credit you in the book with 100%. Discovery yeah. of this bird.
And if the book ever actually makes any money, we would absolutely figure out some kind of profit sharing. Like that's.
Oh my God! Right.
Yeah.
And then you can tell people you're a published author and also that you receive royalties.
Also, if you just think of a bird name and you're like, I want none of that, you can just write in and let us know and we'll discuss it and figure it out.
We didn't even get into raptors or owls or anything.
Nope.
Like,
nope.
Most of the bird names we came up with sound like tiny little things that hop over rocks.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
So there's a whole ornithological world of possibilities.
Yes. Yep.
Oh my God. Love it.
Delighted.
Yeah. Here's another animal story for you.
Oh yeah.
So some people down the alleyway from us have a 20-foot shipping container that they store stuff in.
Okay.
Because it's secure and adds on space to their garage, which is already full of other stuff. And they're like a delivery service or a courier service or something like that. So anyway, all of that's kind of irrelevant. I'm realizing now they have it doesn't matter why they have a shipping container out back of their house. They have one. And the other day I saw the most ginormous groundhog run across the alleyway and sneak into the hole where you would like stick it with a forklift to lift the shipping container up off the ground. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe that a groundhog that looked so pudgy and and big and voluminous was able to fit into that tidy little space. And it reminds me that like rodents always have puffy fur and they're smaller than they look, but it was very cute. And I was like, I want to be friends with that woodchuck. That was a very sizable woodchuck and he seemed to have a good place to live. That was really cute. There's a lot of wildlife in our neighborhood.
Yeah, that's really fun. Yeah, you guys have a lot. I'm actually excited to see what. My partner and I are about to close on our house, so that's very exciting. Probably by the time this is published, we'll have resolved that. Like it's all kind of pretty much settled at this point, unless like we're doing the final walkthrough tomorrow, basically. So
amazing.
So it's also in San Diego, but it's a little more rural. I mean, it's still pretty urban, but like there's going to be like right now I live in an apartment. Or like a sort of an apartment over a garage behind another house. And there's a little bit of a yard and things. But this place has a little like a wash or like a drainage sort of in the backyard, like in between the houses, which I think is actually technically part of our house. I was looking at the property line. But there's a lot of vegetative growth there. And it's like it accesses like a larger part of the wash that goes through other properties back into like where it drains out. And it's all just kind of like wild land there. I mean, it's not a lot.
Nice.
We're not like a fucking jungle or something or like a forest, or like, you know, but I am interested to see like what I can get to grow back there and like kind of, you know, make sure like I'm going to try and rehab it as a native natural plant area.
Hell
yeah. That like butts up against the yard. So I think it'll be cool.
Amazing.
So I'm sure we'll get some interesting creatures from time to time, for sure. I'm going to try and set up like a little sort of trail cam, like webcam or something.
Oh my gosh, that'd be so great. Maybe you'll have more possums.
Yeah, we got possums and raccoons in San Diego pretty regularly.
That is so cool. Yeah, I think that my plan to like revamp the yard and make it better, and by better I mean like restore it to a somewhat native habitat, has worked because now I'm attracting apex predators to hunt in the yard, and that's a good sign.
That is a good sign. Yeah, absolutely.
Of course, I told Damon, you know, as soon as you widen your circle of care to include all of nature, you will immediately get your heart stomped out.
Yep.
You're like, hey, nature, I see. And then you're like, oh, there's a lot of murder happening right here.
Yes. Yeah.
All the time. Yep. Oh, God. Terrible things are happening all the time in nature.
It's very competitive. It's a really rough environment. I think it also helps you to appreciate like what we like how we've evolved as humans. Like that, like there's a reason that we've like stomped on nature, right?
Right.
It's like it's fucking killing us. Like, you know, I'm not saying that. I think there's it should be more examined than we've done for sure. But, you know, I'm not justifying it. I'm just saying it's like, you know, it seems pretty obvious like why we live in houses and people want to live in cities and, you know.
The bubble. I want to be in the in the not murder face right? bubble.
Right. Yeah. I think this is where I really struggle with a lot of like the thing that like eats at me when someone's like, I'm a Christian or I'm like a, you know, I believe in God and blah, blah, blah. And they have this like this worldview of like everything according to God's plan kind of thing. And I'm just like, God, it just so invalidates the huge amount of suffering that's going on and the suffering that happened in order for our life to exist in the way that it does. And it just invalidates that, like, oh, God made it this way. It's fine.
Totally.
I was like, it's not fucking fine. Like,
it's not fine.
You know, it is natural that those things have died and that, you know, like crows peck the eyes out of a fucking cat, or, you know, like whatever insane shit that they do. Like, you know, all of those things do happen, but like it doesn't, you know, I don't know. That's a long philosophical rabbit hole over there.
Yes. I was listening
full
to
of a lot of dead, maimed, deformed rabbits.
Oh, man. So many dead rabbits.
Yeah. A lot of suffering.
Scream. Rabbits scream. Yeah, I don't know if like scream. Depending on where people live, they may or may not have come in close contact with rabbits in and around where they live. But if they get injured and not killed and they're still alive to tell you about it, they will scream. And it sounds like a child screaming for help. Yeah. Which is a bad evolutionary thing, because when I hear children screaming, I'm just like, can someone parent them into silence, please?
Right.
I was sitting here earlier with a friend of ours.
Yeah.
And the across the street neighbor's child started screaming. And the person I was sitting with like was like, ah! It's just the kid across the street. And it's not actually someone who needs help and was just, I don't know, struck by a car or something terrible, being abducted. Like human murder happening right now. I don't know.
Yeah.
There are a couple of kids in my neighborhood who scream like someone's getting murdered. And it takes you a minute to register like, oh, huh, everything's okay. That's not someone in distress. It's just a child scaring the rest of us to death. I was going to tell you something too, and I forgot. Oh, what was it? Fuck. It came and it went. Came and it went.
It's all right. It's all good. We could talk about my therapy today. So,
oh, yes. What happened to your therapy?
Well, I won't go into details because it does. It's very private and personal, and I definitely don't like to share any information at all on the internet about my
Tell us everything you said at therapy today.
No, but my therapist, my therapist sent me this clip from Mr. Show, which so if you're not familiar with Mr. Show, Mr. Show is a show that was on TV in 1995 and for four seasons, so like 1995 to 2001. And it features Mr. Show with Bob and David. So Bob Odenkirk and David Cross. Bob Odenkirk, you might know now from Better Call Saul.
Yep.
And David Cross, probably best known, well, in certain circles, from Arrested Development, as the one of the very funny characters who, well, do you have
Tobias Funke?
Funke, yes.
The world's first analrapist, which is a combination of analyst and therapist, which is like basically the same word for something separated by the 80s.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
People prior to the 1980s had an analyst that they would go and like lay on a couch and then the person would analyze what you were saying, and then that like morphed into therapy, I think.
Yeah.
And now we call them therapists instead of analysts.
Yeah.
But he like combined them, and so he tells people.
His character was just like the king of like just inappropriate phrasing constantly.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. And he was like Lindsay's husband. He married into the Bluth family.
Yep.
And she married Tobias just to piss everybody off, I think, is what the backstory was. Yes. And he has like no sense of humor.
Not at all. Yeah.
My favorite thing about that character is that he's a never nude.
Yes.
Which is like you discover by accident when somebody incidentally and accidentally discovers him like taking a shower with cut off jean shorts on.
Yes.
Or like he gets out of the shower and he has a towel around his waist and then he lets the towel fall and he's wearing these jean shorts. Yes. And so it's like this, it's his personal like hang up or whatever. He's a never nude. He's never without his
clothing.
Jean shorts on.
Yeah, jean shorts. Yeah.
Never. And they're very, very tiny cut off yes, jean shorts. Yeah. You know, they have to be to fit under all the rest of your clothes, right? Yes, yeah. And he like becomes incapacitated partway through the series and ends up with graft versus host disease and like does a fundraiser. Yes. And then everybody finds out that it's like the graft that he had was like hair plugs because he was balding and not like an organ transplant, like a lung or a kidney or something like that.
Right, right.
Oh, and it's a big scandal because everything the family in the show does is can't not be a scandal.
So
Arrested yeah. Development's wonderful.
So my therapist sends me this. Well, he told me about it in the session. He was saying like, you know, this is, I have, the way he described it is he was like, hey, so you, so my therapist is talking about like my experience with my family and like dealing with my, you know, trying to repair relationships in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about how he's like, if you've seen that movie, Inside, where there's like these characters inside of you that represent
yeah.
sort of emotions, right? Or
yeah.
these like particular aspects. And he was like, I just picture you as David Cross in this one skit when you're interacting in one of these family interactions, like trying to mm-hmm. explain the situation over and over and over again, trying to get them to understand the position,
yeah.
like the situation. And so in this skit, he says, I'll send it to you. So he sends me this skit and it's David Cross is doing a pre-recorded live call-in TV show.
Yes.
And so the premise of the show is that like every week it's pre-recorded, but he says what the topic will be next week. So if you're calling in now, that's the topic that you're going to talk about. So next
right.
week, we're going to discuss the political climate. So if you're calling in while you're watching this episode, you're going to talk about the political climate, which is next week. And so like, and he's just this like distraught, like it just the escalation of his like rage and anger over people not getting this and like him
yeah.
trying. And at one point he like pulls in he's like, the caller calls in and it's like, so this week, the episode that he's doing is like old people. It's like, we're going to talk about the elderly. And,
right.
And so one person calls in and is like, I'd like to talk about my grandmother. And he's like, yes, this is it. This is what we're talking about right now.
Yes.
Amazing. And so he like, and then the person says, yes, my grandmother's having trouble sleeping. She has this cat. And the cat is like, which is last week was the pet.
Last week was about
and he's
pets.
Like, he's like, and he's like, okay, but it's about your grandmother. He's like, no, I really feel like it's more about the cat. And then he like pulls this TV on a cart, like you'd see in the AV, like the AV club would wheel them
yes.
around the school, or like you'd bring, like when the teacher wheeled it into your classroom, you're like, fuck yeah, it's movie day.
Yes.
But you know, an old CRT on a cathode ray tube on a cart, like mm-hmm. you know, that's showing the previous week's episode of him losing his shit over someone calling in and talking about how the previous week before that is when like. And it's just
yeah.
so fucking funny,
like,
because
then
in that video, he pulls in another cart. He pulls in the same cart, but it's on the video. So it's like this infinite regret. It's like just TVs all the way down as he keeps pulling in episodes from the previous episode. Anyway, so my therapist
oh God,
was
it's
like,
so good.
Yeah, but it was very, I've really enjoyed this therapist, working with this therapist. It's been great because like it's, you know, it's at the end of the day, they're just a person and you kind of have to form this relationship with them that hopefully
yeah.
works and is of therapeutic help.
Right.
And I think he both gets me, and it's really funny that he, I'm glad we can have this relationship, right? Where it's like we can
yes.
kind of laugh and joke about the nature of being human and, you know,
that's what, like, that's how you know he gets it, because
yeah.
he's like, hey, this other abstraction over here of what we're dealing with is funny for these reasons.
Yes.
Check it out.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
My therapist is on hiatus right now, so I don't know when she's coming back because she's dealing with some stuff in her own life. Yeah. Imagine that.
Yeah, that's and, fucked up. But you're the thing that matters.
Right, but I'm it. What else is there? Right. Because I have a completely insane family who do very unpredictable and violent and dangerous things.
Right.
Sometimes in my spaces, uninvited.
Yeah.
I always have my therapist. Like, we have a standing appointment every week. And sometimes we don't have that much to talk about because nothing insane is going on. But when something crazy happens, mm-hmm. it's good to know that I'm never more than 7 days away from having this conversation with the same person who I know has like a long view of my historical situation.
Right. Right.
And so now that she's on hiatus and I'm not entirely sure when she's coming back, I mean, not never, but just like not for a month or two, probably mm-hmm. to deal right. with what she's dealing with. I'm just kind of like in a limbo where I'm like, but if something does happen
mm-hmm.
now, I don't have a plan or a person to tell about it. Like, I would tell Damon, obviously. He lives here. It's going to happen to him, too. Unless, like, every time Damon goes on a trip without me for work or something like that, one of my telepathically through the universe, the message is transmitted to my family, and they're like, oh, is now a good time to act up when you're alone and largely unwitting and defenseless?
Right.
And these things come in waves. Mm-hmm. Like, I probably told on more than one episode of this podcast, I probably mentioned that there was a police raid. And then like a week after it, the crazy, insane police raid right next to my house there.
Yes.
My cousin showed up and had like basically a nervous breakdown on my back patio. And it was also a dangerous situation, not because he was like of ill intent, but because he was kind of having a moment. And so anyway, two really high stress things in the space of a week. Mm-hmm. And then the whole time Damon was like in Bath, England, like for a work meeting.
Yes, right.
And so I didn't tell him about any of this shit while he was gone because I didn't want to be like, police showed up, 60 cop cars shooting, lots of
right.
like insane shit. And then also like a complete decompensation of a human being on the back patio and near avoidance, but barely avoided having to call 911 by the skin of our teeth.
Right, right.
Just like, you know, oh my God.
So the usual shit.
Yeah, the usual shit. You know, no big deal. Just all of this happened in the space of 7 days. It just struck me now that, I mean, I never took my therapist for granted. I've been in therapy with her for 10 years mm-hmm. on purpose. Like, nobody mandated this for me. I choose it.
Right.
But it's just like, I don't like not knowing where you are. It's like, I don't know anyway, because we have a patient therapist relationship. So it's not like I know where my therapist lives or like any sure. details about her home life or anything. I know she has a dog mm-hmm. because during COVID she worked from home. And so there was a dog there.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know anything about where she lives or like anything beyond the fact that she has a dog. And I don't know what's going on. And since we're not like friends,
right? You don't.
I can't be like, "How are you doing?"
Yeah, right. You're just like, "We'll see."
Like my actual like the extension of my human concern for this person that I give a shit about, not just because of what she does for me, but because
I mean, you know, if you're kind of someone who easily forms empathetic bonds, which I know you to be,
yeah.
That's kind of happens. I mean, I like, this is the problem I run into, right? Is it's like, I'm just out there like working with somebody and it's like, oh, they're going to like clean my, you know, this person's going to come like mow my lawn or something one time, or they're going to like repair my car. And now I'm like, we're going to be best friends. And I'm like, that's right. Not right. Like, it's just,
yeah.
You can't just shove that all on them. It's not my responsibility.
Right.
Anyway, but yeah, I get what you mean. Like, it's hard to like, that's a tricky situation because what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You may never know.
Yeah. So I'm just like, now I feel kind of like the floor is out from under me and I'm just kind of like floating like Wile E. Coyote when he runs off a cliff before he plummets to earth.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
But yeah. I'm aware of it.
Yep.
Like I'm just out here waiting for my family to do something crazy.
That's funny.
Yeah. So far, so good, though. It's been a few weeks since I saw her last. And Everything is going okay so far.
That's good. That's good. It's always a little unnerving when you have something that keeps you propped up emotionally suddenly disappear.
Yeah. Oh!
Like good drugs. Suddenly you can't get them anymore.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Oh, no. Oh, God. When I was meeting recently with a new financial advisor who is very fucking cool.
Yeah.
He and I bonded because we both have extensive nerve damage, and also we both hate Immanuel Kant and his stupid, stupid, dumb, Swiss cheesy, full of holes philosophy that has had an outsized influence on literally every aspect of how we live our fucking lives under capitalism. Oh, he was like, fucking Immanuel Kant. He said something derogatory about the categorical imperative. I was like, shut the front door. Are you serious? You hate him too? And he's like, yeah. I was like, oh my God, we are going to be amazing together. Like, we care about things at the same speed with the same depth, right? And I was like, this is going to be amazing. You're going to help me plan out how to be a vampire and live into the next century and how to pay for that, and I'm gonna bring you incredibly interesting problems to try and solve, which is like your bread and butter, and this is gonna be great. We're gonna ask the weirdest fucking questions. It's gonna be amazing. He's like a data analyst and his partner is the financial advisor.
I mean, so I wanted to say a lot of things. One was like, can you tie this back into art and design? Because this podcast is about art.
Okay, here's how to design. Yeah. Like, specifically, like the person that I have hooked up with to do financial advising for me is someone who is extremely focused on working out scenarios and understanding how much of something you can know and how big of an influence that thing has on your future. And so I'm bringing him problems like, hey, every woman in my family has lived to be over 100 years old.
Right.
And with the advances in genetic medicine that I am aware of, because I keep reading about these things in current events on purpose, I am aware that it is entirely possible for people of my age to take certain medicine that is in the pipeline now. Mm-hmm. And because I am long lived genetically to begin with, the addition of some of these medicines could ostensibly allow me to live very healthy and capably into like the 130, 140 year old range.
Right, right.
So my question to you, financial advisor guy, is can you help me understand how much money there is now, how much money there is likely to be if certain things are true in the future, and how to make that money last me until I die at the age of 150 instead of like 100 or like 85? Mm-hmm. Like, and he was like, oh my gosh. And we had this like discussion about all this stuff, right? And he was like, but wait. And like the discussion as I'm describing it here is about like a quarter of the speed that it actually happened at in real life, where we were like, oh my God, and like talking over each other. And I was like, yeah, so this is the thing, right? Like this is going to be widely available, and this is like real easy medicine. We're not talking about like highly convoluted things. I mean, getting to this point has been highly convoluted to the point where we understand and can do this stuff. But doing the types of things that will give people the types of medicine that will allow people to live and expand their health span into like the hundreds plus year range, like that's not far off at all. And it's going to mean radical changes in our culture and how we deal with people who are aging and how we support people and what Social Security looks like and all, like so many fucking things. And he was like, oh my God, but what about this and this and this and this? And I was like, right, these are all major considerations. I mean, if your obsession like me is in like the weird marginal statistical stuff where it's like, well, this is really all the further we can know with any certainty, and our certainty is only this percent certain, and like all this layers and layers and layers of statistics and working out if then statements and all this stuff, I was like, have I got an adventure for you? Like, I'm gonna be a vampire and you're gonna help me get there.
Right. Yes. Got it.
And so we're going to ask all the questions.
Modern day vampirism.
Designing modern day vampirism. Right. Financing modern day vampirism. Yeah, that's like the his whole thing with his partner. Joe is the data analyst and Eric is the financial advisor. He's like the money guy,
yeah,
and Joe's the data guy.
Gotcha.
And together they like do a really interesting interdisciplinary analysis of like who you are as a person. And they're kind of like existential detectives in a way. Very holistic. They're like, who are you? What do you want out of life? What is satisfying to you? Like, where are you now? Where do we think you'll be? Like, and so they just like spin off all of these scenarios and say, like, with this much certainty relative to whatever, we think that like there's going to be these influences in the world that you'll have to contend with no matter who you are. And then you personally, you're like, where are you guys going to live? Have you done traveling? What are you going to do when you retire? And we're like, well, we're probably not going to really retire in this strict sense. And that like, we'll just keep doing what we're doing now until we die.
Right.
Not because we're like desperate for money or whatever, like, but because it's all, we're already doing the things we like doing.
Right.
Luckily.
Right.
I was like, I just like to read all day. That doesn't cost anything really. I mean, if I had a book budget, like whatever, but, you know, so yeah, we were like, we're never leaving Minnesota. So like, we don't have to control for like the complex finances of owning a condo in Miami right now.
Right.
Like, yeah, so there's just certain things that will or will not be variables in our future existence, no matter how old we live to be. So it's like understanding all of the things that are actually going to be impactful, understanding what kind of life we see ourselves having in the future, like mm-hmm. all this stuff yeah. and how to get there. So it's much more complicated and interesting and question based.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic.
Then like, I mean, you need to buy life insurance, you know.
And this is a good approach to anything in your life. Like,
yes, this is how I think about everything.
So the other question I had, or the other comment I had when we were talking about Kant, is the funny thing is like, I am passingly familiar with the he's German.
Yes, he's German. He was German, and he spoke this weird dialect of German. So people who study him sometimes get two PhDs, one in the ancient dialect, well, not ancient, but yeah, old but the, dialect like, of German, so that they can directly translate his own thoughts from his own writing, and so, then they get a PhD in philosophy. Yeah.
So there is a whole section in the Wikipedia article about Kant, which is titled Racism.
And, oh, yes.
The funny thing about that is like the very second sentence in that section says, while few, if any, dispute the overt racism and chauvinism present in his work, a more contested question is the degree to which it degrades or invalidates his other contributions.
Uh-huh.
And so this sentence in and of itself I have some issues with. So if you take chauvinism right off the face of it, which is to say that it's not necessarily prejudice against women, that's the most traditional use of it.
Yes,
it has been, according to the OED, Oxford English Dictionary, it can generally mean excessive or prejudiced support for one's own cause or group. So it can mean still racism of a kind.
Sure.
But in particular, male prejudice against women is like, you know,
how it mostly shakes out.
How it mostly shakes out. And one of the problems I have oftentimes with, I don't know, problems, something that I'm still trying to wrap my head around, like philosophically, as I learn about, racism and I learn about chauvinism and sexism and all of the sort of problems that come with that, is that a lot of times there are people who are really like vocally like, well, racism is bad, and they'll turn around and say some really disparaging shit to a woman in the audience, like right in the
vicinity. It's not the specific instances, it's the relationship involved that's like, the problem.
And I feel like sometimes, and this is not to say that there is a competition or that one is more worse than the other, it's just that oftentimes I find it funny that there can be individuals can strongly recognize sort of the negative aspects of racism and be completely blind to the fact that there's like this broader thing going on of like sexism against women, like just across the board, across time, across history, like in all aspects, right? It's like, you know,
it doesn't make the translation in their mind like, okay, but in either instance where like you're being racist or you're being sexist, it's you treating someone else shitty
Yeah.
The fact that it's you specifically and those other people specifically is maybe less important than the relationship dynamic itself and the fact that it's very similar in both cases.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like this like racism is, you know, is not over, but like generally we don't have slavery in the U.S. except for women. We still have sexual slavery in the
farm
U.S.
Farm workers.
Yes. No. I mean, look. Yes. Like gray all the way down. Absolutely. I'm just kind of like, we don't have chattel slavery, generally speaking, that I know of.
Not as widespread as we used to have.
Yeah. But like we have fucking sexual slavery like across the world. And like, guess who's mostly a victim of that? Women.
I feel like there's a lot of like very iffy shit going on in the Middle East where like people will have housekeepers.
Yep.
Like people who live in Dubai, and I know this from someone I used to know who lives in Dubai. People in Dubai will hire people from Africa to come to the Middle East to be their housekeepers. And it's the same sort of thing where like kind of like how Americans will not hire other Americans as housekeepers. They'll like hire someone who doesn't have a green card or is here without papers and documentation because you can basically like not pay them and abuse the shit out of them and they have no recourse.
You have a huge amount of power. The power dynamic is massive.
So, yeah, like
you can leverage their whole life against them.
I feel like these things are kind of the same thing. Like you said, not specifically chattel slavery where you're like auctioning human beings openly on an auction block and trading them like livestock, but like pretty fucking close, or at least like the updated version where it's like you take someone out of their home environment with their support network, drop them in a foreign country where they have no rights, and then pay them whatever you feel like and make them live with you so that they're there 24/7 and don't have days off.
Right.
Ah!
Yeah.
That's so fucked up. But yeah, okay, so Immanuel Kant and his racism.
Yeah.
Yeah. He sucks super bad. Like his whole, like there are so many people who like do all of these mental backbends to make what he's saying make some kind of crazy sense.
The Daily Beast did an article about virgin auctions, which are big business for some adults. In 2018. Like this is my point is like,
yeah.
In the world, slave auctioning is happening to women more. I mean, I'm sure there's
young
boys and stuff, but my point being is like, I find it oftentimes there's a bit of disparity where it's like people will feel very strongly about one thing, but then the other thing is just like, that's not a thing. That's not a thing. And I'm like, man, it's
because
still a fucking thing.
They fail to see how the same principles translate from one to the next. And so what you should be upset about is the violation of the principles that you hold, not the fucking specific instance of that violation.
Yes. Yeah. And the reason this feels relevant to me is that we're like currently facing an election in the U.S. against someone who is like just basically saying like sexual slavery for women is going to be reinstituted in that. Like we're already doing it, right? Like, you know, it's enforced pregnancies and like you no longer have access to healthcare as a woman, like just, you know, anyway. It's just really upsetting to me that it's like there's not this like stronger connection of being like, man, like, you know, all his racist attacks like don't seem to land well in the media, but I feel like the sexist shit is less enraging somehow.
It's like our culture permits it more.
Yes, that's it. Yes, like that's I don't know. I'm struggling to like put my tongue on it because that's gross, but you know what I mean.
I just run around putting my tongue on things and I can't quite get it this time. I just thought of somebody like licking light switches.
Anyway, that got deep and weird.
Well, thank God for those licking light switches.
Yeah. Oh, thank God. Anyway. Yeah. Well, thank you for indulging my sort of mental gymnastics to get there.
Yeah. He's such a poop. Like his whole. Okay. He is. Immanuel Kant is such a poop. His whole thing was like, I read David Hume's like actual philosophy and now I'm mad about it. And so I'm going to like, okay. He kind of reminds me of a stalker. Like he's a sociopath because his whole life into adulthood, he didn't do philosophy. He was not a philosopher, did not consider himself a philosopher, wasn't involved in any of that stuff. And meanwhile, like, David Hume is writing a bunch of stuff about objects and what is knowable and how much certainty you can have over things and like just a whole host of stuff, right? David Hume is writing about this, that, the other thing. And somehow Immanuel Kant, I don't remember how, like, gets his hands on the work that David Hume published, and midlife, like old man, like is older than us, I think, gets so upset about what David Hume has said that he rearranges his entire life to center on refuting things David Hume says. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And also his philosophy didn't make any fucking sense. Immanuel Kant was that guy who overcomplicates his shitty ideas that don't connect to anything to the point where it obfuscates that there's no connection. And people are like, oh, well, he seems really smart, so I'm just going to go along with what he's saying like it makes sense, even though it fucking doesn't.
Oh, God. Yes.
Like, I really think this is just like this mass delusion, and people who are like, oh, he's such a great philosopher. Like, he's got these great ideas. I'm like, no, he fucking doesn't. And from go, they're bad. Like, his whole thing with the categorical imperative is like, you have to treat every situation ethically as though what you are doing is not only universal, but required. Why? Mm-hmm. Why do any of us have to pretend like that is a thing? That's such a dumb point of origination. Like, okay, like the way to be an ethical person is to think about like every action you take has to have universality, which means that every other person on Earth in the same situation had to be compelled to do exactly the same thing that you're doing. And it's just like, that doesn't make any fucking sense, because that, first of all, that's not how anything works. Mm-hmm. And then, like, famously, they're like, you know, he said, like, if authorities came to your house and they were looking for someone who was in your house, it would be like basically like any sin is on par with the other shit. So like if a cop comes to your house and says, I'm looking for this person, and you lie and say you don't know where they are even when they're in your house, that is just as bad as a whole bunch of other stuff that you could do, right? And it's like, and it's never okay to lie. Like, all these categorical imperatives, it is categorically never okay to lie, which includes lying to help other people. So in other words, like, if you live in Nazi Germany and you have Jewish people in your house, and the police come and they're like, hey, are you hiding any people in here? And you lie to them. That lie is allegedly just as bad as whatever they do to like harm these people, or worse, or like anything right. You can think of. Like, it all just, it flattens the human experience into a binary where things are an up-down vote ethically, and mm-hmm. reduces everything to this like completely unreal set of circumstances that like are not universal at all. They're just not. It's just not. You can't universalize everything. It's so stupid. It like, and it completely contradicts things like the theory of relativity, which when you get into thinking about big concepts, there's a lot of crossover. Like, you can't right. have a philosophy that violates fucking the laws of physics and shit. Right. Like, and then you also realize that, like, all of this is relative. All of it's relative anyway.
Yes.
Because, like, on another planet, a bunch of the rules that inform the way we think about what reality is would be different. And so we would come up with much different conclusions about what it means to be alive and how to behave.
This is, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but this strikes me as the issue I'm having with in therapy with my other family member.
Family.
I'm trying to repair this relationship, and their kind of approach to things is like, they're like, okay, I hear what you're saying, the table is white, therefore when I spill the black paint on it, it really shows up, and it really mars the table, like, mm-hmm. you know, spilling the black paint on the white table is really bad. Got it. And then next week they're like, why are you so mad? Like, this table is brown. I spilled black paint on the brown table. Like, I don't understand. And I'm just like, man, like, this isn't even, the problem isn't that you spilled the paint. The problem isn't that you, like, the problem is that you don't recognize when, like, you're not, like, like you're too busy focusing on drilling down and creating these like bedrock, like solid ideas without any recognition that context is everything.
Yeah. Yep. Context is everything.
Without it, like it's meaningless. Like maybe we both agreed that table should be painted black, or that we like the black paint spilled on it. This one. Right. Like the rule isn't all white tables must never have black paint spilled on them.
Right.
The rule is context, motherfucker. Was that my like dining room table that I was just getting ready to like host a dinner at, and you bust in the room and chuck a can of black paint all over the fucking top of the table, and then you get mad, and then you're mad at me that I'm mad?
Oh my God, this is just like when my mom was like, pulled out the cliche. If everybody was jumping off a bridge, would you do it too? And I was like, is the bridge on fire?
Yes,
like,
right? I mean, yeah, what are my
maybe
choices here? Yes.
Like you want me to support your like all one way, all the time idea here. And I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to validate that.
I do kind of, I have a little sympathy for our parents in because they had so many of those things, and I suspect that their parents said this kind of shit, and somehow it worked or whatever. I don't know, but I just imagine they like, you know, maybe the reason they all voted to like undermine the education system is they were upset that their fucking children were smarter than them.
Well,
and they're saying shit like that, and then a fucking 9-year-old is like, yes, I would, especially if the bridge was on fire. Also, all these other contextual, but like, and then at the end of the rant in return in their face, like, what are you even fucking saying with that statement?
Yeah, right.
Like, are you mad that I got my you know, I painted my nails blue?
Right.
Why? Let's get into that.
Yeah, like why do you care? Why did you have to like
you care about this?
Respond to me with a weird metaphor about jumping off a bridge? It was just
spouting
like,
philosophy at me. Let's fucking go, bro.
Well, right, and I mean, how typical? Like,
sure.
They should have known back then.
Yes.
That they had someone philosophically minded on their hands, because everything just raises more questions for me. Like, if you want to have a sincere conversation, if all your friends were jumping off a bridge, would you do it too? This raises so many questions. Do I trust my friends? Am I in a club with my friends that is specifically designed to celebrate jumping off of bridges? Is this a bridge jumping club? What are the parameters here? Yeah. Is the bridge on fire? Is jumping off of the bridge better than staying on the bridge? And if so, what are the reasons why it's better or worse?
How like, high is the bridge? Is there water below? Is it summertime?
I have so many questions. Yes. Like, I can't, and I'm not trying to be an asshole. I'm not like, well, is the bridge on fire? No, it's a serious question. If you're going to ask me a serious question and be like a shit about it, then I'm going to ask you a serious question back. I don't know. Yeah. What reason might I have? What reason might there be for all of these people to jump off the bridge?
Yes.
Is it a good reason or not?
Right.
Like, maybe, but me answering maybe is not me being a shit.
No.
It's just being serious. Like, I don't know. Maybe I would jump off the bridge.
Yeah. Who fucking knows? Like, come on.
I think like, and I just remember my mom being really exasperated with me when I said that. And I thought like, are you pissed because you think I'm being a shit? Or are you pissed because this has never occurred to you?
Yeah, they're right.
To ask this question.
Right. Exactly.
Like, so yeah, I don't know. Immanuel Kant is a real butthole. I think David Hume's thing too is like there can't be a categorical always right, always wrong, like unifying theory of ethics with like a prescriptive code to it, because like some things are just not knowable. Like his whole thing is about like how objects kind of like recede from you. The Hyper Objects book talks about this a lot too. Objects recede from you because when you're looking at something in three-dimensional space, there is always a side of it that is obscured from view in like because it's a three-dimensional object, right? So whenever I'm looking at a cup, I can only see one side of the cup until the rest of the cup disappears from view. And so if there's certain things about everything, like everything has aspects to it that you cannot detect or determine just by witnessing and experiencing it, which means that like there's some shit you can't know, which means there can't be hard and fast rules for all of the ethics all of the time.
Right. Right. No, they're just,
There is no categorical imperative. There is no one universal rule that tells you how to behave or treat other people right. or be ethical. Like, that's the whole thing. And Immanuel Kant was basically like, and then spent the rest of his fucking life trolling David Hume.
He was just a
huge troll.
That's funny.
Huge fucking troll.
I mean, this is just really...
But a lot of his fucking philosophy, if you don't read too far into it or try to connect it to like real life, validates and justifies much of the terrible behavior associated with capitalism.
Right, right.
So like it's everybody's like, he's a genius because he came up with the rules that let me claim I can do whatever I want to make myself better. Like it just coincides, you know, like so yeah. much of the world we live in stems from his ideas because his ideas validate and reinforce the shitty ideas of the most sociopathic people in our culture.
God, yep.
And how they want things to be so that they're not the asshole. I'm just doing what's normal and natural, not voluntarily being a total fucking prick to everybody else in humanity, right? Right, yes. Like, yeah. It is the way it is because it's supposed to be.
Sorry.
If it wasn't okay, it wouldn't be this way. Yeah. This is what I tell myself every night when I go to bed after looking at my $1 billion bank account. Uh-huh. I'm a good person. Oh my God. So the other day I was out and I have this sticker on my phone that says I poop on billionaires. And it's a yes. sticker with a picture of a bird, like a cartoon of a bird. Yeah. And then in a circle around the bird, it says I poop on billionaires. And somebody asked me what it meant. And it never occurred to me that it wasn't self-evident. So then I had to explain to them how I think billionaires are unethical and the idea of a bird pooping on them is funny to me.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, when you deconstruct it, it's not funny anymore.
Well, it isn't, but it's funnier. It's just not funny in the moment. Like,
right.
I like... I wish I could remember. I was watching some YouTube video and this woman was talking about something I was interested in. I don't fucking know. Synthesis or some shit. But yeah. She was talking about these shirts. She had this like bird shirt and it said, and I wish I could remember what it said on it, but I was like, that's really funny. And then like halfway through the video, she did her little like self-advertising and she was like, yeah, like this shirt and I've got these other ones. And she's like, I've got a version of this shirt that explains it because not everybody gets like, and it was like, you know, it was like, it was like blue-footed booby or something. Like, yeah. That's it. Like, you know, there's nothing, it's funny in and of itself, right? It's yeah, a bird right. shirt. Like, and it was just really funny to me that she had to explain it.
Right. I poop on billionaires. What's that about?
Yeah, well.
It's not about anything. No, it's about how billionaires are terrible. I don't know.
Right.
We should poop on them.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So yeah, what else?
Well,
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. That's really it.
We covered a lot of stuff.
I let the color research team go on a very long holiday, and so they're still on holiday and I need to get them.
They're really on more of like a sabbatical.
Yeah, they're a little bit of on a sabbatical. So
they're off exploring themselves.
Do we have any? I feel like we have some other segment ideas, but.
Oh, here's one. Here's one.
Yes.
What is the sandwich of the day?
Oh, shit. Okay. What is the sandwich? Do you have one?
I have a sandwich of the day.
Okay.
It's my favorite sandwich, so it's easy to choose it.
Yep.
The sandwich of the day is two slices of bread.
Check.
Both with peanut butter on them.
Okay.
On the facing side. So you peanut butter both slices.
Okay.
And then
crunchy or smooth?
Smooth.
Natural?
I'm not. Yes, I like natural.
Okay.
And you don't want one with a lot of sugar in it.
Gotcha.
The closer to like just ground up peanuts you can get, the better. Gotcha. So you put peanut butter on one slice, peanut butter on the other slice, sprinkle curry powder over it.
Okay.
on both slices so that the curry powder sticks to the peanut butter.
Okay, so definitely you want not sweetened peanut butter if you can.
Right. Yep. Thinly, thinly, thinly slice and layer a bunch of cucumbers on okay. both sides of the sandwich on top of the curry and peanut butter mix.
Yeah.
And then if you want a sweet addition, you can insert pineapple as well, slices of pineapple.
Yep.
And then sprinkle on both slices. So you have basically like two stacks of identical food, bread, peanut butter, curry powder,
yep.
cucumbers, pineapple. And then to finish it all off, red pepper flakes and salt.
Oh, sounds good.
And then you smash it together and you eat it.
That sounds really good.
It's a really good
sandwich. Where did you come up? Did you?
I do not remember. I did not originate the sandwich. Somebody else told me about it, but it's basically like all of the flavors of Thai food smashed into a sandwich.
Yeah. So there is a YouTube channel I like to watch a lot called Sandwiches of History.
Oh!
I sent you his website, and I really enjoy the YouTube channel because it's very short.
Wow.
It's like usually like 5 minutes, and he finds... you know, he finds recipes from historical documents or whatever.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. And it's, they're really good. And I'm, the reason I thought of that is because you had mentioned the sandwich and I was like, some of his sandwiches are kind of like this, like they're really kind of off the wall and they're very.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's like, I think a little while ago he did the tomato and it was like a bunch of different versions on the tomato. So it's like basically various tomato based sandwiches. None of them stand out to me and he rates them and he talks about them and it's great. It's very, it's pretty like low investment. Like you don't, if you don't have a lot of time, like you can grab a video and be inspired or just be entertained.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway,
we have to start a spreadsheet for sandwiches now.
Yeah, we may have to start a spreadsheet for sandwiches. And I think if the Burbs book goes well, maybe sandwiches would be up there.
Yes!
Because I think naming things and then inventing the backstory for them is definitely our jam.
Yes. You know what? Also, like if we did a sandwich book,
yeah.
it would be amazing to illustrate the sandwich recipes like an exploded diagram of a sandwich. Because
yes.
that is how I think when I cook things.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. Just the
like, I don't want to, yeah. Like, also, I notice in a lot of cookbooks that they like lump the ingredients. Like, when they list the ingredients in the big list at the beginning,
yep.
the things are always next to the other things that they go into the thing with.
Yep.
So, like, the first five ingredients are like, here's all of the dry powdered ingredients. And then, like, the last half of the list is like the wet ingredients. And you mix all of the top half of the list together, and then you mix the bottom half of the list together. And then you put everything from the bottom half of the list into the top half of the list, right? But
right.
they never describe it that way. They list everything out. And I'm like, why is this in a linear conceptual format? Like, that is not how anybody cooks. You don't cook linearly.
Right.
And like, the formatting of the book itself doesn't translate to how you think about formatting the food in three dimensions in real time. And so I'm like, I just feel like we could illustrate and write this out better, in like visually, the way that cookbooks appear instructively could yeah. be vastly dramatically improved upon.
Yeah.
Because like you have to do the translation of these different modes of thought in your head on the fly. And I'm like, why don't you just do it in the book?
Yeah. I
like in the text. I don't know. Anyway, it's my bitch about cookbooks.
I dig it. Yeah. No, it's great. yeah. Good times.
Yeah. So I don't know. Thanks everybody for listening.
Yeah. Thanks everybody. Don't forget to email Dana, D-A-N-A at fcbam.io. She's great.
Yeah.
And we all want to hear from you.
That's right.
At all times with no exceptions.
Forever. No exceptions. All the time. Categorically. Always.
Yeah. Categorically. Always. Yeah.
Right. It is a categorical imperative that you contact us all of the time constantly.
Yes. Yeah. Must. It's a must.
I mean, like, if fucking somebody came out of the woodwork and was like, hey, I read what you wrote about this, and I'm not going to give this up until I'm dead. You'd be like, I'm getting a restraining order. Right?
Yes.
You crazy asshole. Like,
uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
Getting a restraining order.
God, see? Seriously, I mean, yes, stalker.
Obviously, but it's just so. So funny.
Don't read Immanuel Kant. Read David Hume, though. He's great.
Yeah, yeah.
It's his ideas that got him all riled up in the first place. So.
Get you some Hume in there.
Get you some Hume.
Yeah. Okay, I think that's it. I think we did it. Everybody, thank you so much. This was a long one. We appreciate you listening all the way to the end. It's super important that you do. Don't hang up until we're done.
Okay, don't hang up. Don't do it. Don't. Okay, bye. Okay. Okay, bye.